Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Michael Kist.
You caught me not listening again.
Benjamin Solak.
You never listen!
It's the Kist and Solak Show, presented by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation.
You are flying high on the Kist and Solak Show. This is episode 112, brought to you by the fine folk at SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow me on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T. As always, joined by the best doggone co-host in the game, Mr. 9-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. You really didn't want to say hello there?
Hello. Well, I was just bothering BLG on Slack, and so I was a little late, but I was going to come with it.
Ben, how you doing, brother?
Listen, there finally something's happening in the preseason. Yeah. Something interesting is happening, which, start the clock, 9 minutes and 45 seconds, as promised. I tweeted out before the game this evening. It's Thursday night, recording the post-game podcast. Not actually the post-game podcast.
You won't even let me lead you into it.
No, absolutely not. This is my shining moment. You want to leave me in? Go ahead, leave me in. It's your show, whatever.
Goodness. So Ben tweeted, quote, McCown gonna unlock preseason J-Jaw with accurate / catchable jump balls, and I'm gonna spend exactly 9 minutes and 45 seconds on the post-game pod talking about it, unquote. So Ben, I'm gonna let you go ham on this. I just want to say that release was so pretty. That route was so pretty. But I don't want to steal your shine, man, even though I had him higher on my board.
Shut up.
You were the one that told me about him originally. Let me tell this quick story, because we've told this before, but I want to put it out there again. When I asked you last summer, who should I watch? And it was the first prospect that I was going to watch of my draft season. I went specifically to you. You told me J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, and I was in love immediately. Ben, go for it.
The thing about good football players, Mike,
is you like them?
They're good football players. That's how it goes. So Arcega-Whiteside, he's had a couple of targets from Cody Kessler, a couple of targets from Clayton Thorson over the course of the preseason thus far. Thorson and Kessler, well, honestly, both look prettier throwing the football than McCown does, because McCown's got an absolute shot put in his ripe young age of 40. That dude's out there, that shoulder can't get up much higher anymore. I mean, that elbow stays low, brother. While they might look prettier, they don't throw with as much velocity. And so they're struggling to hit Arcega-Whiteside, if you watch the first two games, on some of his downfield route concepts, which McCown didn't even throw a huge number of downfield concepts as of, you know, this conversation. As we were saying a little bit earlier, we're currently in the lightning delay, and we are talking about, you know, what we've seen thus far. We'll see what happens with the rest of the game. And if there's something that happens at the end of the fourth quarter, we'll go ahead and we'll talk about that. But if you're looking at the Eagles-Ravens game right now, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, from a receiving perspective, he's seen nine targets, eight receptions, 104 yards, and a touchdown. It hasn't even been that much deep stuff, but McCown's been able to really fire it in there for Arcega-Whiteside. And accordingly, Arcega-Whiteside's gotten into a better rhythm. He's made some good catches across the middle of the field, strong hands catches across the board, the typical stuff that you see from him in the first level, fourth down conversion work to the second level. And let's talk about that fourth down conversion play, because it gets lost a little bit in light of the touchdown catch. That's where Arcega-Whiteside, you knew he had translatable traits to the NFL, because when he's coming off the line, it's not, you know, he's not lightning quick, he's not lightning fluid, and so he doesn't, you know, clear hands immediately, and he's in space, and he's releasing, and he's manipulating guys, and he's dipping, and he's dodging. He's not shifty, right? Arcega-Whiteside's a bit of a blunt force instrument, and so that corner initially gets hands on Arcega-Whiteside, and Arcega-Whiteside is strong enough and explosive enough to get upfield through contact, get vertical stack, and then separate, and this is why you expected McCown, who's been in the league for now 16 years, 18 years, whatever it's been, you expected McCown to immediately gravitate to Arcega-Whiteside, because Whiteside, while it's not, you know, in this route, out this route, in this quick step, in this release move, and multi-break routes, and you know, all this explosiveness, he's such a friend of a quarterback. Quarterbacks love receivers like Arcega-Whiteside. They are no-nonsense. They get into their breaks. They win with leverage. They separate and they make ridiculous catches outside of their frame. And then so Osiko Whiteside regularly catching balls that are behind him from Josh McCown. That's why you love him. You love a guy if you're McCown. Accuracy's not great when you're 40. First time in the system. Don't have a good feel of you know, where Osiko Whiteside's going to be, what the exact, you know, route landmarks are going to be, the time he's going to be. It's okay. Get the ball kind of near the dude. Yeah, that catch on that little bubble screen, that ball was at his ankles. Our single wide set's got absolute mitts. So that fourth down catch, we fight through contact. We're able to separate. It's not a huge amount of separation, but it's enough to create a window. And then the ball's behind him. Our single wide set's able to corral it and get upfield. He doesn't have breakaway speed, but all of a sudden it's an explosive play on fourth and three. Then you have those situations like the touchdown. And the touchdown route was a flag route, beautifully executed. And if you watched our single wide side casually, couple games to get a feel for him, to talk about him, you would not have known that Arcega Whiteside can do things like that. But when you sit down and you really get deep into the film of this kid, and even like, I guess if you watch his highlight reel, you also know this is available to him. But you, when you really broke him down, it was not like, oh, occasionally he can do this against college defensive backs. No, this is a regular occurrence against the best players that he faced. Arcega Whiteside, I said it, no nonsense, immediately takes the corner and puts him where he wants him to be. Josh Gattis, offensive coordinator of Michigan, says, if that corner is where you want him to be, move him. If he's where you don't want him to be, keep him there. And that's what Arcega Whiteside is very good at initially saying, all right, when I'm in this stem, I eventually want to get here. So I want the corner and outside or inside leverage. And he gets him there. Just a quick initial first step. Good initial, you know, jab steps we talk about. Off the line of scrimmage. Hand usage. Now get upfield into the vertical stem. All of a sudden, corner's in a trail technique. You give him that rocker step. A little, you know, a little fake to the post. Hit the corner. A little POCO route, we like to call it. So a little fake to the post with the rocker step. And then come to the back pylon. Stack to the back pylon. Our single white side always talked about this. He wins the catch point early in the route. He wins by being physical and generating leverage before the ball's in the air. So he's not worried about getting to where the ball's going to end up. He's first worried about making sure he's between where he wants to be and the corner. So the corner can't recover. Now, when you do that, you got to be able to make catches outside of your frame. You got to be able to explode into the catch point, make those tough hands catches, track the ball over your shoulder. That's exactly what he did on the touchdown catch. Everything you've seen from Arcega Whiteside in this preseason game, toughness with the ball in his hands, good route running, fantastic physicality through the route stem, and then tremendous, tremendous physicality in all aspects of the game, is exactly what he, like, it's just, it's a perfect little microcosm of what you drafted at 57 overall, 57, 53, 57. In the second round, it's exactly what it is.
57, yeah.
Right. It's exactly what it is that you were looking for out of this player. And again, because McCown is a veteran quarterback, we knew he could get it to him and be successful doing so. Mike, I went for about 5 minutes, not my promised 9 minutes and 45 seconds, but that was mostly a hypothetical figure to illustrate how excited I was for it to happen. And I'm so glad that it did, because it's easy in the preseason to, you know, say that, ah, like, where's this second round pick been? Where's Arcega Whiteside been? He's just been waiting for a quarterback who can get the ball kind of near him on time.
If you did not believe us then, when we talked about it in May, when both me and Ben were talking about J.J. Arcega Whiteside, do you believe us now? To emphasize something that Ben was saying there, as far as the release goes, to really emphasize that, that corner has outside leverage on him. J.J. Arcega Whiteside widens out to him to get himself inside and then beat him outside. So he beats a corner with outside leverage by getting outside of him. That's not easy. That's not rookie stuff. That's not typical. And when you hear you hear Ben talk about these different traits that JJ has that you don't always just get from his highlight films, which are just filled with red zone catches and contested catches and things like that, when you really break him down, you see the nuance in his route running, in his releases, to where, like Ben said, he's not going to be this big, quick separator.
Right.
But all the traits that Ben was talking about and all the things that attracted J-Jaw to McCown, does that not sound like Alshon Jeffrey? So, of course, McCown is going to gravitate towards a target like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. And I'm just so happy that we got to see a lot of that skill set on display. Not just the jump ball, 50-50, go get it, but show some nuance in your route and get the job done and show off those strong hands like he did as well.
Do you want to get like really like legit deep into this route on like a preseason week 3 touchdown catch from the rookie? You want to get deep into it?
I felt like we already had, but I can, let's go.
He's this isolated receiver on a trip set and he's in a nasty alignment, right? Why is he in a nasty alignment? Because he wants to get to the outside flag. When I talk about a nasty alignment, I'm talking about a tight slot into the tackle, right? You're pretty much like, you're in a position where you could execute a crackback block. Let's put it that way.
So let's clarify that. From a nasty alignment, your route tree opens up. From an outside alignment, from a quote unquote plus split, right, where you're far outside, you can't run that corner route. That space is not available to you. They move him to that alignment because of the nasty alignment. And Ben is shaking his hand. Do we have the game? Is the game back on?
Game is called, brother. Game is called. We are done. Called. No, thank goodness. Good night. Okay, so right. So we're in that tight alignment. Corner's obviously got initial outside leverage, but there's a safety capping Whiteside. They've got, you know, they've got a middle of the field safety. I can't see the whole field, so I can't tell you if he's split or if he's actually single high, but he's shaded to Arcega Whiteside's hash. Again, Arcega Whiteside is the only receiver in a 3x1 set. So
right.
Let's say
if you were to split it, it would look like cover two zone or cover, right, you know, man cover two or whatever the case is. He's over to that side. Right. JJ in college, very good at recognizing that safety, staying away from him.
So, yeah. So this coverage, while he manipulates the corner, is dictated by the safety because corners initially got outside leverage. Arcega Whiteside wants to go outside. If he's afforded, he's being given freely an inside release, right? Corners on the outside. If he takes that inside release, he's going directly at the safety. And accordingly, yep, that corner is going to remain an outside leverage all the way down the field.
Right.
And then when Arcega Whiteside looks to break to the flag route, again to the back pylon, cutting outside, the corner's already going to be in an outside spot. Arcega Whiteside's going to need to cross his face. Now,
yep,
no matter what Arcega Whiteside does, that corner's going to try to maintain outside leverage because he has safety help to the inside of the middle of the field. And it's a nasty alignment, so the corner's just going to say, listen, if you try to go inside, you're running into the safety. I'm sitting outside of you because this is where space is, and I know I want to keep you from getting there. So Arcega Whiteside initially widens the stem. He initially steps outside and yep, then comes inside that corner, effectively resetting where this route stem is. Instead of being up to the safety, he just gained 2 yards of width away from the safety. What does this mean? It means while the corner is in outside leverage, in the trail technique following his stem, when Arcega Whiteside gives that inside fake, it's significantly more effective. Because if he were closer to the safety, the inside fake wouldn't matter as much. Because if the ball were coming out on a quick inside dig, safety's taking his head off. But now you've manufactured synthetic space. You've told the corner, listen, I just pushed you inside, and it looks like I'm about to... I just pushed you outside, and it looks like I'm about to come inside. That makes sense, doesn't it? I put you over there and I'm going to cut back the other way. So by pushing him outside to start, he makes the threat of the inside fake more real, thus forcing the corner to play it, thus giving him the space he wants on the outside. And it's all dictated by the fact that he knows the corner's going to play outside leverage because the safety's in the middle of the field. So like, this is why, like I said, like if you want me to go 9-45, I will. But that's everything that goes into this route. And this is Arcega Whiteside. Is he the quickest dude? No. But this route is exactly what is called for in this situation. This is his third NFL game with a quarterback he's never played with.
When I graded Arcega Whiteside for mental processing, and for a wide receiver, mental processing is seeing things pre-snap, knowing where I need to go, and then adjusting post-snap if I need to, I graded them 6 out of 7. And when I grade 6 out of 7, that 7 is very, I don't give out 7s, okay? So that's a very, very high grade for mental processing. JJ Arcega-Whiteside is a very, very smart player. And a plug to follow up on this, so because we've definitely gone over 9:45 now. If you go to my timeline and also the Bleeding Green timeline, the BGN Radio timeline, you're going to see a couple of tweets. Number one is the recap show where we have a snippet of Ben talking about JJ Arcega-Whiteside from back when we drafted him. That was a plug from BGN Radio. I also, when I graded JJ, I wrote that up for BleedingGreenNation.com. They just retweeted that out. You can find that on their feed if you don't follow me, and I don't blame you. Or you can find it on my timeline where I went through every single grade that I had pre-draft for JJ Arcega-Whiteside with an explainer, with some film examples, if you really want to dig into his game. Like I said, if you didn't believe us then, do you believe us now? And if not, continue to do the research, and you're going to find that we have a very good football player on our hands in Philadelphia. Ben, we haven't even talked that much about Josh McCown yet, other than his trust in JJ. But I got to tell you, it feels like the number two quarterback spot.
Well, yeah,
is definitely like 17 for 24, 192 and 2 touchdowns. Now, obviously, preseason backups, all that stuff, whatnot. But McCown's been around, like he's a known quantity, and he came in off the plane and looked like he was in command of this offense, and just it has the trust in guys to go make plays. And with an offense as loaded as the Eagles, you don't need a whole lot more than that to be successful, to get you through a stretch if you need him. What do you think about McCown tonight overall?
Yeah, somebody said it. It was one of the beats, and I'm sorry, I can't remember who. If somebody remembers who it was, hit me up. But one of the beats said, listen, McCown ain't coming out of retirement an ESPN job if he doesn't know QB2's locked up, right?
Right.
Like, if it wasn't promised to him independent of his play in the preseason, he wouldn't have come out. His roster spot's guaranteed, and his backup spot is guaranteed. Hey, it's a shame for Cody Kessler, who obviously came out and looked just tremendously bad.
He's so slow at reading defenses, it's offensive.
And it's just, he's got a pop gun arm. And, like, again, like, he's like, not the worst quarterback, too, that's ever existed. He really isn't. I still believe that. This wasn't a good game of his, but he still wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, look at quarterbacks around the league, and that'll tell you what you need to know.
Right. And McCown is a better player. Now, like I said, McCown throwing mechanics, boy, it ain't what it used to be. And it was never good to begin with. But he's clearly just playing the game. Like, he's like, listen, I've done this for 19 years. I don't have to pretend to, like, do the right throwing motion anymore, like, go through drops, right? He's just kind of out there slinging the pill a little bit. Best placement we got on throws for Arcega Whiteside, of course, but also for Greg Ward. Greg Ward had one of his better games of the past, of the preseason, 4 for 45 were his catches. Again, this is we're better ability to evaluate our wide receivers because Clayton Thorson and Nate Sudfeld aren't the ones throwing the football. McCown, more than enough to, and this is how you always frame it, Carson goes down for four games. Can we go 2-2 and keep and stay in where we are in the playoff race? Like, that's what you want from your backup quarterback for 2019. And McCown is absolutely that. The big thing that I would say is that it's very clear that McCown does not want to run the football or get hit. And that's very fair. You know what I mean? Like, he had that one little scramble, right? And then he got down, and, you know, he slid. And it was like well-timed slid, everything like that. But, like, there was a, he got hit on the, I think it was the Alex Ellis touchdown, and they, like, zoomed in on him getting up. And he was like, well, like, what am I doing?
This sucks.
You know, like, I don't know why I'm here. I made the joke that, like, do you think he knew when he signed up that he was going to score a touchdown and, like, halfway jog off the field, take his helmet off, and Doug was going to be like, get back out there, 2-point conversion. And McCown's probably like, shoot, I'm too old for this. It's just, he's going to be a pocket guy. That's totally okay. They can be all right with that. No worries.
You were talking about the wide receivers. I want to dial back to that here for a second. With Mac Hollins back and actually doing athletic things on a football field, it kind of slams the door on the wide receiver chatter for good. And we kind of thought that was going to happen anyway. If they do keep six, it seems like it's a battle between Agudosi and Greg Ward Jr., who you mentioned before. I definitely give the edge to Ward right now, who Groh has been very complimentary of throughout this process. And he's looked solid in this preseason, the training camp. He's looked solid as he continues to transition from college quarterback to full-time wide receiver in the pros, including a tough catch on third down where he took a shot and hung on in the third quarter. And of course, bailing out Clayton Thorson last week on the 38-yard touchdown grab. But my opinion is, if they keep six, it's Greg Ward Jr. Do you think they keep six? And you agree with that as well with Ward?
Here's the tricky thing. What it comes down to is, and this is like goes back to when, you remember when PFF said the Eagles have the best receiving group in the NFL, and it was like wide receivers plus tight ends?
Mm-hmm.
Because the Eagles are going to run a lot out of 12, more than the average team, then there's a better case to be made than the average team for keeping like four tight ends and five wide receivers instead of six wide receivers and three tight ends, which is the more typical construction. So it's not, I would say, like, if you took all the teams in the league and say, who's the least likely to carry five receivers, Eagles are probably, you know, bottom two, bottom three, because of how infrequently they're going to deploy 10 personnel.
Not only that, the practice squad factor, clearing waivers, that too.
Right. And that's my big thing with, I think it's, you know, it's lock Alshon, lock Nelly, lock Deshaun, lock Arcega Whiteside. I think Hollins makes it unquestionably off of special teams value. They love him on special teams. This is a guy who went healthy. Like, you know, he was viewed as like a potential wide receiver three candidate,
but also touted very much so for his special team prowess when the Eagles drafted him.
Right,
that was his deal.
Yeah. And so then what it is now you're sitting here with a sixth spot. And the question you have to ask yourself isn't, has Greg Ward done enough to win a roster spot? Has Carlton Ogudasi won enough to win a roster spot? It's, of these fringe guys, and the fringe guys at running back, and the fringe guys at corner, and the fringe guys at defensive tackle, who am I able to sneak onto the practice squad, right? Because, like, to me, Agudasi is a particular candidate for being poached. If I'm a bad team with bad receivers, and that body makes it onto the waiver wire, heck yeah, brother. I'll put him on my 53. I ain't winning ball games anyway.
Kelvin Benjamin keeps getting work somehow.
Is that right? It's like, listen, like this is, you know, it was like the Mailata thing last year. Like you didn't want to expose him to waivers.
Right.
So to me then, like I don't think Agudasi has earned a spot on the roster. I don't think Greg Ward, for everything that I like about Greg Ward, I'm a big Greg Ward fan. I don't think he's earned an active 46 spot, a 53 man spot. But the paradigm isn't earning it. The paradigm is, who do you have to protect from ending up on the waiver wire? So that's the way to think about it. I think the Eagles go into the season with five and hope to keep Ward and Agudasi both on the practice squad. And then subsequently, you carry Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert, Josh Perkins, and Richard Rodgers. I don't think Rodgers needs IR, but that's the because you probably have to carry four tight ends, because if you're not putting Rodgers on IR, you have to carry three healthy ones. And you're not going to cut Rodgers. You can't practice squad him anyway. He's too old. So that's how I think it is coming into the season. Four tight ends, five receivers.
And when we come back here on the Kist and Solak show, we're going to talk about some other things that we saw in this preseason game. As Ben said, the game is officially over. It has been called early in the fourth with about 11 minutes to go. The Ravens continue their winning streak. They are now at 16 consecutive wins in the preseason, which is super important, 26-15 over the Philadelphia Eagles, but it doesn't matter. We'll continue talking about this game when we come back here on the Kist and Solak show.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
And we are back here on the Kist and Solak show, episode 112, brought to you by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I'm Michael Kist here with Benjamin Solak talking about this preseason game. Ben, do you want to talk about the JJ Arcega-Whiteside touchdown a little bit more, or are we good on that?
I want to talk about something that's near and dear to this podcast's heart.
Yeah, do it. Let's do it.
Best game I've seen LJ Fort play in a Philadelphia Eagles jersey. I can't remember Nate Gary even doing anything in this game besides getting an offsides call on a blitz or something stupid. Listen, I'm telling you two things for sure. Number one, LJ Fort is a better player right now than Nate Gary. Number two, Nate Gary's going to be above LJ Fort in the depth chart. I can even give you a third. I'm not going to be happy about it.
That's crazy to me. Fort kick. Showing the range yet again. The guy sees it. He fires his gun. He goes to get it, and he wraps up and tackles. The guy does his job.
Right, and Ross Tucker was really highlighting TJ Edwards, the UDFA out of Wisconsin, for his play at Mike. And Edwards was playing well as the third string Mike. I definitely agree.
Yep.
But I have not seen a good, like the best backup Mike I've seen so far has been LJ Fort. Specifically Mike in the center of the defense, read, scrape, fill, tackle. I think he's been highly consistent. Fort, the biggest issue I have with him is that he's, you know, a 3-4 yard down the field tackler. He's not really great at coming up field, getting underneath blocks, or being, you know, highly like a block deconstructing player, and then subsequently making a tackle short to the line of scrimmage. But he gets to where he needs to go on time, and he's regularly first contact. Accordingly, when he's playing into the sideline, this is where I think he's a more exciting and a better player. I think he's got a really good flow to him, and he comes to balance nicely. And then in coverage, Fort's been one of the more consistent backers for the Eagles. So to me, it should be, you know, you're starting with Bradham at Mike and probably Camus at Will. When you go three backers, you're probably putting Zach Brown at Mike and then moving Bradham to Sam. And then your fourth linebacker for basically every spot is Fort.
Yeah.
And then five, I mean, I don't want Gary. I probably don't want Edwards. I don't want Singleton. I'd like somebody else pretty much.
Yeah.
But what's probably going to happen is it's going to be, like I said, Bradham and Camus, and then Bradham, Brown, Camus, and then Gary's going to be four, and Ford's going to be five. I guess I would keep Gary as the five, but like I'd want to get somebody else in there, for God's sakes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you know how I feel about that whole situation there, but I think Gary makes the
roster. it's getting missed, and I think a slew of, you know, like Trace McSorley played really well, and the Eagles gave up 25 points in the first half. I don't dispute that. LJ Fort, best preseason performance he's had, from what I've seen.
As the conductor of the LJ Fort hype train before they signed him, I'm very happy with this. It's great for my brand. Hey, one thing that I was hyping up in the offseason that doesn't really get talked about, man, we had a Rodney McLeod sighting today.
Yeah.
He looked healthy. Young man was moving out there, which is going to be great for this defense because we saw what happened with the secondary. I mean, the first real big hit to happen was McLeod going down early in the season, and he was playing at a very high level. So if he can get back and get healthy, he's one of the first guys to come back. We're still waiting on Ronald Darby. We're still waiting on Jalen Mills, unfortunately. We're waiting on some guys to get back. But with Rodney McLeod back, that's great for the secondary. So that's great for our brand as well, because we're big McLeod fans here. Something that's not great for your brand. How are you feeling about that over on the 85% field goal percentage for Jake Elliott?
Okay, firstly, nothing is ever bad for my brand. My brand is indomitable and unassailable. That's number one. Number two, yeah, as I have been saying from the beginning, the Eagles have a kicker who can't miss from 50 plus, and they're a team that does not attempt field goals from 50 plus, which is a problem. I mean, there's absolutely no way this isn't mental, right? It's got to be. It's got to just be him like looking at it and be like, man, those uprights look bigger than they should. Looks like there's too much space between those two.
Everybody knows it. Everybody recognizes this now. It's impossible for him not to.
Right. I mean, so pretty much this preseason, I think he's 3 of 5. And I think he's hit 2 for 2 from 50 plus, and he's 1 for 2 from less, 1 for 3 from less than 50. I think, if memory serves, I think that's it right now, which is just patently absurd. What it comes down to is this, and this is what I bring up all the time when it comes to kicker things, like the whole Bears kicker thing that's going on, which, if you haven't read Kalen Kaler's piece on Sports Illustrated, shameless plug, a great piece about the Bears just totally losing their mind over the kick that was tipped. It was tipped.
Right.
It was tipped.
How are they not?
It's amazing. But anyway.
Such a scapegoat, yep, for Trubisky.
Right. What it is like, if you're going to move on from a kicker, you have to actionably prove to me that you can improve upon him. And for even what Elliott is, which is like not one of the best kickers in the league. Firstly, kicker is not as valuable a position to the Eagles as it is for other teams because they don't kick as many field goals, number one. Number two, you still can't really find like a free agent, a guy in the market to improve upon him. We're too late for a camp battle.
Carly Lloyd.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm there. I'm there in a heartbeat. I've been saying, listen, I've always been of the theory that like, oh man, I'm an old washed soccer player who's slow. What should I do with my life? Brother, throw on some pads and chill on the sideline for 58 minutes. But either way, it's it's too late for a camp battle. So like, all right, if Elliott's like shaky this year, if you want to improve on him, you know, bring in a UDFA, bring in a free agent next year, make it a camp battle, see if somebody can beat him out. But right now, Elliott's your kicker for 2019. There's no way they're moving on from him unless injury or like an absolute implosion in the season, which he probably won't implode in the season. Like, he's done this before where he's like in a couple of missed, you know, a bad streak, and then he gets hot again, you know, from inside 50. But it's very silly, Mike. We live silly lives where Jake Elliott's like, yeah, 58 yards, let's get it. Oh no, 36. Why?
I don't. Yeah, he's mentally tough though. Like you said, he'll get over it. He doesn't get in those prolonged funks, which is good. And speaking of special teams, man, this game had a ton of flags, sloppy stuff. It was so sloppy. There were so many flags that Eagles fans in attendance were actually booing a flag called on the Ravens,
yes,
which was just fascinating.
Further
and
proof
so
that Eagles fans and Philly fans in general accurately communicate how they legitimately and authentically feel about a game. No, this is, well, the Eagles fans shouldn't
that.
Boo. Well, they want you to stop throwing flags because they're bored, and that's okay.
Yeah, stop sucking, we'll stop booing. Speaking of sucking, can we talk about the two cornerbacks that we had? Josh Hawkins, Jeremiah McKinnon.
That's not great.
Ben, I don't think you understand how much I was longing for the days of Jay Liggins. Those two, Hawkins and McKinnon, they are straight up space cadets. Space Cadets.
What happened to Jamalcolm Liggins? Where are you at?
They cut him. They had to make room for him to make some other move.
All right. Yeah.
And I don't know where he went, but you would think by the way that these games go after the quote unquote starters, like, but not actual starters, maybe who knows, by the time they come out for the Eagles, you would think in these preseason games that the Eagles have like literally zero corners rostered,
right?
Because it's so bad in the depth in that area, and man, do they need people to come back from injury. I don't know how you felt about how they played, but I don't think there are any answers there. The secondary guys, I'm not sure how the safeties played. I have to kind of check that out when I watch the rewatch. But any thoughts on winners on the defense, maybe in the secondary? You can kind of take it where you want to from there, because I know you usually write the winners and losers column for BGN,
right? Which I have not even begun, so I thought I had 12 minutes of the fourth quarter left to do it, and then we started recording this and the game ended. Which is great. I wanted to stay up late writing that column. Yeah. You know what I think will happen?
I don't know. That's why I want you to tell me.
Eagles are going to roster Jalen Mills, Ronald Darby, Sidney Jones, Rasul Douglas, Avante Maddox, Craven LeBlanc, Lordness Kendrick, whatever. You don't want, like, is there a reason to practice squad Jeremiah McKinnon, Josh Hawkins? No. Nothing here. Ajinay Harris, Sojourn Shelton, the Rutgers kid. Whatever, right. Chandon Sullivan, the Georgia State kid from 2018, who, they had to actually have play for a little bit, but they practice squatted him initially. He ended up moving to Green Bay. He's probably getting cut because Green Bay's added multiple corners since then.
Mm.
I would not be shocked if they bring Chandon Sullivan right back onto the practice squad if they can.
Yeah.
Right? They have to wait until Green Bay does, but I would imagine
he's not good, but I feel like they would feel better
right,
about him than these other guys.
I didn't like his film coming out. I didn't like his fit in Philadelphia, but Jiminy Christmas, he's better than Jeremiah McKinnon. This is right. This is what I'm saying. I'm like, and they brought him in as a UDFA last year, so we know they like him. My main point here being, I wouldn't be shocked if, the Eagles keep six corners, they keep seven corners, whatever. If and when they practice squad a guy, it's not one of these fellas, because I think they've seen enough from Josh Hawkins and Jeremiah McKinnon, like you said, to know that, we can look elsewhere and give you guys a chance somewhere else. Maybe it's just, hold on to Sojourn Shelton and chill. Like, they've got good corner depth. We haven't seen a lot of them because a lot of them are rehabbing and whatnot, but they have good corner depth. They're fine. It's not like these are important positions. Just talking about building out the practice squad. Speaking of unimportant positions and building out the practice squad, Eagles trade Bruce Hector for Rudy Ford. He was a 2018 sixth round pick, I want to say, out of Virginia. For the Arizona Cardinals, a safety. Why trade Bruce Hector? Because you currently have players in Hassan Ridgeway, Trevon Hester, and finally, a person who's just hive I have randomly ended up in, Kevin Wilkins, who undrafted free agent at Rutgers, who keeps playing well.
Yeah.
The Eagles are, I think defensive tackle might be the best position, deepest position. Just single position?
It's the deepest with quality depth with guys that can come in. You get to like five and six deep.
It's probably offensive tackle. It probably goes offensive tackle, defensive tackle, and then wide receiver in terms of just like the full strength of everybody on the depth chart, right? Like when we got to 53, it'll probably be like tight end because like two of the three guys will be like top 12 players in the league at their position.
It's a smaller group.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But like defensive tackle with Fletch, Malik Jackson, Timmy Jernigan, and then let's say you keep five, probably Ridgeway and Hester. Man, I mean, Hester, who, like, I wasn't the biggest fan of him, when they first signed him, he's improved steadily. Ridgeway looks like a great acquisition for the seventh round pick that they sent for him. Seventh, sixth, whatever it was. Pointless move, whatever. It's like Ridgeway, like, he's consistently disruptive. Wilkins, I don't know when they put the third string team in, but I can always find out because there's just a huge dude with dreadlocks who's as wide as a door frame, just right in the middle of the backfield. I'm like, oh, it's the 13 defenses that Kevin Wilkins is playing. Consistently, his pass rush ability, not there. He pushes the peak of the pocket, that's it. But in terms of getting off the ball and presenting and filling gaps against the run, he's really sound right now. So I weirdly like Kevin Wilkins. This defensive tackle room is really good. It's very deep and very strong. Philly should be excited.
Yeah, they've definitely been very good throughout the preseason. And we're going to continue covering the Eagles' preseason moves. We're getting closer and closer to roster cutdowns. Of course, we'll have tons of content here at BGN for you. Ben, I think that's going to do it for the recap of the Eagles-Ravens' exciting, erotic preseason action. Would you say goodbye to the gentle, gentle listeners?
I have bad news and I have good news. And I have more good news. And then I have more good news. Okay, so... Bad news.
I'm gonna tell you this. if you got engaged again and you talk about your mic again first.
No, no, Michael, we don't talk about that. Bad news. The upcoming Eagles game is the fourth preseason game, which will likely include exclusively Cody Kessler and Clayton Thorson, as well as no players who will have significant playing time in 2019, the regular season. Bad news. Good news. That is the last week of the preseason, subsequent to which the regular season will begin September 8th against the Washington Redskins, opening 75-yard touchdown pass from Carson Wentz to DeSean Jackson. It's going to be beautiful.
Destined.
Further good news. There's real actual football that matters on Saturday. Mm. It is between Florida Gators and Miami Hurricanes and the Arizona Wildcats and the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors.
Cole McDonald.
Yes, go. If you don't like college football, that's fine. But this is real football with a score that counts, with records that matter. I haven't seen it before. And the teams are actually trying to win. And I could not be more thrilled. And finally.
Wait, with zero context, I just want to say, Cole McDonald literally put up 12 million points in the Hawaii Spring game. Go back.
Yes, absolutely. And you can look it up. That's true.
That's a fact.
Anyway. And the final piece of good news is that you were just listening to the Kissed and Soul Life Show here on BGN Radio. We do appreciate you swinging by. As always, if you enjoyed this show, Mike's so pissed. If you enjoyed the show, go ahead, rate, review, and subscribe on whatever app you listen to your podcast. But let's be honest, it's only iTunes that counts. If you leave a 5-star rating, I'll probably read it, screenshot it, send it to Mike. We'll laugh about it a little bit. Send it to John and BLG. BLG will make a joke about me. It'll be a good time. We'll have fun. I've been Benjamin Solak on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-E-K. He's been Michael Kist on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T. I'm sure other things are happening on this podcast network in the next week. Just, you know, subscribe so that you don't miss them. Yeah. Goodbye.
We might have big things coming. You never know. We all we got. We all we need. Fly, Eagles, fly.
BGN.